Sarah Dalton is the Executive Director of the Association of Salaried Medical Specialists, Toimata Hauwater. They've finished a new report, and based on current trends, it's going to take like a century for our people to catch up with Pākehā New Zealanders in terms of life expectancy. The Creating Solutions Te Whai Tika report recommends a national goal of achieving health equity for all New Zealanders by 2040 and lays out a roadmap of policies to get there. Sarah, thank you very much for joining us on the program today. Tēnā koe.
Kia ora, Dale.
Good to talk with you, Sarah. Thanks. Well, obviously, people would have hoped that over time the life expectancy in this country would be across the board, but it's not. And so we need to put some processes, some steps in place to address that inequity. What was behind the Te Whai Tika report, and what do you suggest the most important kaupapa to surface from it?
So we were actually approached by Phil Bagshaw and his wife Dame Sue Bagshaw, who run the Canterbury Charity Hospital Trust. And they were looking for an organisation to work with them to support a conference that was solutions focused, because we talk about the many, many problems and that we face in terms of our health system and a number of societal imbalances, I guess. And so we said, yeah, your kaupapa is fantastic, let's have a conference. So about 200 health professionals, educators, unionists, got together back in July. We had a virtual conference over a couple of days, and then this document is what we've put together as a response of the speakers that we heard and the conversations that we had at the conference. So it's about 50 pages jam-packed with what we think are 13 key steps that we could take as a country that would see us having an equitable health system by 2040.
We probably don't have time to go through all 13, but some are no-brainers, it would seem. One recommendation, that cost barriers such as GP user charges have got to be removed. Can you share some cordial on that one?
Yeah, absolutely. So many, many New Zealanders tell us that they can't access a GP or a dentist. It's really important to remember barriers to dental care, because that's a massive determinant of ill health if you can't get dental care. But either through location or cost or a combination of those factors, maybe lack of sick leave, inability to make an appointment in a reasonable time, people just can't access it. And we don't think the current kind of business-driven models and the way primary healthcare is funded are working for many New Zealanders. Yet, it's actually the cheapest, most efficient and best way to treat people who are a little bit sick, if they can see a dentist or a doctor or a physio in a timely fashion when they're not too sick. That, you know, the most expensive, least effective, efficient way to treat people is to wait till they're so sick they end up in a hospital. And that's worse for the people and their whānau, and it's actually worse for the health system and the economy.
I'm pleased you raised the dentist issue, because when we look at income levels for tangata whenua, we recognise immediately that there is a huge gap as a generalisation in the pūtea earned each week. And so if you've got a bigger family and you're struggling already and you're in one of the lower socioeconomic areas raising your kids, you're not going to have the money for dental work, which is extremely expensive. And I suppose for too long we've thought of it as a cosmetic issue rather than a serious health issue. I'm pleased you've touched on that, because if you've got poor dental health, then you're going to have poor overall health. That's just one example. Can you elaborate a little bit on that one, please?
Well, I'm glad you've raised it as well, because, or you know, recognise that, because lots of people don't realise that we also have dentists who are members of our union, so senior doctors and dentists who are hospital employed. So most dentists work in private practices, and that's the level of care that you're talking about that many, many adults can't afford to access. And actually, some teenagers who qualify for free access aren't accessing that care either, for whatever reason, reluctance to see a dentist or lack of awareness. And that's that health literacy issue that we all also touch on. But our hospital dentists see horrible cases, even very young children who are having to have all of their teeth removed, and that's a sugary drinks issue, which we could also talk about. But people don't understand that, you know, chronic pain, which can lead to drug dependency, can impact on ability to work, can create mental health issues for untreated dental issues is a massive concern. We even have people ending up in intensive care units for issues that originated with unmet dental care. So it is huge, and it is really debilitating for people and their families, and it is a massive cost on our system, both in terms of the healthcare system and all of those people that get locked out of work or, you know, can't participate fully in their lives, and terrible quality of life as well with chronic pain. So I don't really understand why we treat mouths and teeth differently. As you say, it's treated as cosmetic, but you ask doctors and dentists and they will tell you it's fundamental health care.
Sadly, yeah, we're witnessing what is in fact a global issue, and that is poorer health, poorer life expectancy of Indigenous and First Nations peoples. There are many reasons why that is the case in 2021. I'm pleased that the report, whilst identifying some of the reasons for that inequity, is actually focused more on the future. And surely that's where we must put our resources, is to trying to do something about it rather than trying to understand why it might be.
Well, there's only so much hand-wringing that we can do. And there are some really practical things, but they will take some leadership, particularly from government. For example, you know, there's already a living wage movement that is based on a calculation that says, you know, what is the minimum hourly rate that a person can earn that would support them and their family in dignity? So if we made the minimum wage the living wage, that would be a really solid step forward in addressing inequities. We need to extend access to early childhood education so that everybody can access that for their kids, because that early life access to education is really, really important. And, you know, there's a whole lot of other things that are attached to that. And also people who receive benefits, those benefits should be set to lift people up, not to hold people in poverty. There's also, you know, the ongoing issues around lack of access to warm, secure housing, which is really a big ticket item. And a lot of these things people say, what's ECE and housing got to do with health? It has everything to do with it. In fact, 80% of the things that impact on our health and well-being sit outside what's, you know, vote health or the health system. So it's, we need to take joined up whole of system approaches. But we could.
We're talking about it. I hope other media outlets are. I mean, it's important to us because it's, it looks at our case and the situation we find ourselves in as a people. Who do you think needs to read and act on Te Rawhai Tika? And will the Ministry of Health take note of, for instance, of the suggestions?
I hope that they will. I think now's a really great time because we've got the Māori Health Authority, we've had the board announced, we've got Health New Zealand, their board's just been announced. This government has said that at least part of our health system has to be led by Māori, for Māori and for the rest of us. And so, you know, we're really hoping we can have some conversations as soon as the Māori Health Authority makes some appointments, get some staff. We'll definitely be wanting to talk to them and with Health NZ, because of course, while Māori are particularly affected and we have absolute obligations under the treaty, there's data in this report that says Pacifica people are really struggling under this, and everybody who sits in that poorest quintile in terms of measures is suffering, and the gap is getting wider between the richest and the poorest. And I don't really think that is the kind of country most of us want Aotearoa to be.
I agree with that. I don't know Phil Bagshaw and Dame Sue, but look, what can you share with us about their commitment to trying to address the inequity?
They do incredible work in Christchurch. So Sue works a lot in youth health and works in a free GP service. And Phil is the driving force behind the Christchurch Charity Hospital. And they do massive amounts of work for people who would otherwise be excluded from secondary health care. So I think it's important to note too that one of the things we currently don't do in New Zealand is properly measure what we call unmet need, people who aren't even sitting on a waiting list, who haven't been seen. So we need to make sure we've got proper measures of the people who are missing out on primary and secondary care so that we know the size of the problem and we can take measures to address that. So there's kind of this huge silent group of people who are just flying under the radar, and the work that people like the Bagshaws are doing through the charity hospital and in low and free cost practices are really trying to meet the needs of some of the people that sit within those groups. But you know, we shouldn't be a society that has to rely on charity hospitals, and I think the fact that they have established one and that it's effectively booming, you know, it's become bigger than Ben Hur really, and there are other charity hospitals establishing in other parts of the country. It's wonderful that there are people out there that are willing and able to do that work, but I think it's an indictment on the kind of society that we are becoming that we need those charity organisations.